friends. Thank you so much for joining us. It's me, your friend, Bethany Rutter, and I am here with...
Me, your friend.
Yeah. What's your name?
Alice Slater.
This week it's a book club episode of What Page Are You On? And this time we are discussing When I Hit You by Mina Kandasamy, which was shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction 2018. Didn't win, but pretty good shortlist this year, so I thought it was a pretty safe bet reading something off it that I hadn't read before, didn't know anything about.
I fully expected to enjoy it.
Yeah, me too.
As is the name of the game, really, isn't it?
Yep. The pod motivation.
Our manifesto.
So would you like to tell us about the book, Alice?
So in a nutshell, When I Hit You is about a young wife who is in an abusive relationship with a communist man.
Yes, with her husband, who she's married
Sorry,
to.
Sorry, yes, her husband, yeah.
And as we just discovered while we were saying, what's the character's name? You know, we like to make sure that we know, we can remember key points of books before we talk about them. And we discovered, we established together that, in fact, none of the characters in the book have names. Because there aren't a lot of characters in this book.
No, it's very sparsely populated.
Yeah, and I think that is obviously part of an abusive marriage in a way, is like...
That removal of identity.
Yeah, and just making someone geographically and psychologically remote from things that they find comforting or familiar and not being allowed to socialise and blah, blah, blah.
That's really interesting. I only really noticed that none of the characters had names on the bus on my way over here as I was, like, flicking through the book. And I didn't really have time to kind of think about the significance of that choice within the context of the book.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just thinking more that whenever there's a book about a writer, it always feels like maybe it's an authorial voice. And I wondered if by not giving any of the characters names, it leaves, like, an ambiguity about whether or not we're looking at biography or... pure fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a question that we ask quite regularly on this pod.
We love conjecture. It's our favourite thing. But
that your reason makes more sense than mine.
Maybe. I haven't even asked the big question.
Oh.
Did you dig it?
I dug it too.
And like, yeah, I didn't really have any background on the book beyond... I guess, like, a few tweets and what I'd seen. I don't know, I just felt like it came with, like, a reasonable degree of certainty that it was going to be good, even though I didn't personally know too much about what it was about. Yeah,
well, I guess it's kind of... It's very much what it says on the tin.
Yeah, that's what really surprised me, was much it is what it says on the tin and how it's not really anything else. Like, I really liked that it was such a kind of... specific and concentrated story with so few characters, set in quite isolated and confined spaces.
Yeah, it's quite a small... The world of the book is quite small.
I agree.
So unsettling, so claustrophobic.
Yeah, and really, like, believable in how shit goes down. I don't know, I've read it and I was like, yeah, that I guess that is what a dude would do if he wanted to control you. Like... Yeah, that was very compelling.
It was the bit with her email.
Where he deletes all of them.
He deleted every single one. Oh my god, my heart was in my mouth reading that. Yeah. I was just horrified.
And obviously...
And also the fact that he was replying, but even before that, when he was replying to emails on her behalf.
Yeah.
Awful. I hated it.
Yeah, it really... Maybe I don't read a lot of books about, like, specifically about kind of abusive relationships or domestic violence, but it really, like, was very specific in enumerating almost all the things that someone could do technologically to control you. And there's that bit where they go on a trip together, but she's had a commission to write an article, and he has controlled the fact that she doesn't have, like, a SIM card that works in her... phone and or in her area or something, and like she literally writes this article by like typing it out in tiny notes on her phone but can't send it to anyone because she doesn't have like access to the internet on her phone because he doesn't trust her. And I was just like, what a way to live. Like, I found all of that so horrifying. And yeah,
And within that bit as well, that she even considers phoning the editor and, like, reading it out to him over the phone.
Yeah.
But she's not going to have... She would never have enough time alone to do that. I thought it was really interesting. I love that the span of the novel was only actually 4 months. Or the relationship, the marriage, lasted 4 months.
Yeah.
So it has quite a tight time frame.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, I really like that. But I also like that it gave you a lot of, like... backstory as well with, like, her relation. I mean, it didn't give you, like, a huge amount of, like, biography of that character, the main character, the protagonist. But I really like the stuff from before she met her husband with her, like, former lover.
The politician.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like it just gives you enough to contextualize, like, where she came from.
Yeah.
And why maybe this relationship was appealing at the beginning.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I found the most infuriating, obviously aside from, like, the kind of explicitly detailed terrible things he does in general, was the way that he just kept using, like, bullshit communist man reasoning for why he was doing it. It's I found so that was gross. So repugnant and so
believable.
Yeah, extremely believable.
So believable.
Just, like, the way that a man could, like, twist this communist theory to, like, explain why he was mistreating his wife and, like, why...
And also why she deserved it. Like,
yeah.
The bit about when she makes, like, when she moaned during sex and he's like, this is because, you know, this is because you're middle class
and you're putting your
own pleasure above mine and you're performing its performative idea of sex and pleasure. And it was just, it was so intense. It was such a wild reaction for an involuntary, like, moan of pleasure.
Yeah, and, like, something that you would assume was safe for her to do because it kind of signified her desire for him, you'd think that mm-hmm. that was, like, a thing that he couldn't argue with. But even that, he found some way to justify, like, lashing out at her over. Yeah, I feel like I went through it, like, as I was reading it, I was, like, turning over loads of corners to...
Same.
Like, things that I was like, oh, that's so good. I don't remember why I did some of these. Oh, yeah, so there's, like, a bit that we were talking about. So when we were talking about things where he, like, justifies his terrible behaviour via his, like, communist politics, there's a bit where he tells her off for, like, wearing lipstick.
I also folded over that bit.
Yeah, and, like, he says they'll mistake you for a prostitute, and she says, is the prostitute not a working woman? And, like... You'd have thought that that was kind of a satisfactory answer to your terrible communist husband. But then he goes off on this, like, wild rant. And that basically blames her for everything and, like, her petit bourgeois politics or, like, lack thereof. And, yeah, just... I don't know. There was just a lot of stuff like that where I was like, it isn't even about politics. It's not even like they have some kind of deep ideological difference and that's why they clash. It's like literally anything she does that he wants to control, he will find a way via, like, manipulating his politics to fit the situation that they're in.
But yeah, I completely agree. It's almost like, have you heard of the phrase, bitch eating crackers?
No. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yes. It's when you're trying to find something to bitch about someone just because you don't like them or you have a problem with them. So you end up finding even the most...
innocuous and inane things. Yeah.
Irritating. So that's, look at that bitch eating those crackers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that it felt like that was exactly how that this dude was operating.
And I think that's why the book, like... why it really got under my skin on such a visceral level, because so much of it, even though it's an abusive relationship, so of course it's unfair, but having these, like, arguments that become so violent come from stuff that's so innocuous. It just, like, that injustice just made me shake, you know? Every time he picks a fight with her, and because it's always him picking a fight with her, none of the arguments ever seem to come up organically. It's always him...
finding something.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that it quotes... So each chapter opens with a quote. I love that Cat's Eye comes up.
Yes, yeah.
I, like, screamed. Chapter 7.
Okay, let's have a look. What's the Cat's Eye bit? Read it to me.
Old lovers go the way of old photographs, bleaching out gradually as in a slow bath of acid. First the moles and pimples, then the shadings, then the faces themselves, until nothing remains but the general outlines.
Mmm, juicy Margaret Atwood.
Loves it. That's my favourite Atwood, by the way. I also loved this section about women's clothing.
Tell me about it.
So she's saying that clothing shouldn't be a battleground. They shouldn't be about control and mortification. But then she talks about the difference between men and women undressing. And she describes that women's clothes... where are we? Are clothes made for the hands of our friends. The zip that runs along the length of the dress, the bra hook, the sari pleats at the back, as if we become complete only when we take part in dressing each other.
Yeah, it's like, as much as it's a book about, like, a horrible person behaving horribly, there's also such a, like, longing for kindness and memories of good things and wanting... Yeah, I also remember that. That was really nice.
The quality of the writing is just absolutely sublime.
Yeah, because it's not, like, a particularly plot-heavy book, but I just found every page so extremely compelling. Yeah, because they're writing, and, like, obviously a lot of it is retreading the same ground, because he is terrible in the same way throughout the book. But I never got bored of reading it.
No, not at all. I mean, it's quite misleading in its length, isn't it? Because the hardback is, like, 250 pages, but there are some sections that are only a few lines long.
Yeah.
It has, like, quite a fast clip to it.
Agree. It looks like it would take you the same amount of time as many novels, but I think people could actually read it much quicker.
Yeah.
Although
I didn't read it quickly, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? Why I feel like it's a misleading length, because I didn't steam through this. I really took my time over it. Not because it felt too heavy to pick up, but because I felt it was such a kind of an emotional experience.
Yeah, and I feel like I wanted to take it all in, rather, because it is quite a lot about the same thing throughout. I didn't want to become kind of immune to it as, like, a reading experience. Yeah. I wanted to, like, keep seeing the newness in each bit. Another bit that I really liked, we were talking about a lot of how a lot of the interpersonal stuff is overshadowed by her husband's communism.
Mm-hmm.
I really like, there's a bit where she says, so much of sex is what it is because you're allowed to be yourself. This individuality, which can be anything in a lover, fierceness, clumsiness, coyness, is what makes sex different every time. This is what changes the nature of pleasure from one act to the next, from one lover to another. To play the role of the still passive and submissive woman day after day leaves a woman in a relationship with the ceiling, not with her man. My husband lacks this kind of basic knowledge because Marx and Lenin and Mao have not explicitly written this down, and the declassing classes do not address the sexual pleasure of comrades. I thought that was, like, a really sick burn, like, to be able to, like, speak really incisively about the nature of, like, a woman having sex with a man, and then being like, because it's not in communist theory, my husband actually has no idea about any of this. I was like, yes.
Yeah, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that's, I guess, also backs up the idea that he's not really interested in communist theory. He's not interested in actually, God, it's such a gross way to describe it, but educate her.
Yeah.
It's only about controlling her.
Blaming her for the things that he...
Like, God, the whole bit with the gynecologist.
Yeah, that was really wild.
Made my absolute stomach turn. So stressful.
Why do they go?
Because she is not pregnant, I think.
Oh, okay. Because I couldn't remember the origin of why they go. But, yeah. Like, he never leaves her alone. Like, he's never alone with her. And all of his overbearing... Sorry, he never leaves her alone. She is never alone with the gynecologist. And all of his overbearing behaviour in that, like, hospital setting is read as so, like, caring. And it's just, it makes your skin crawl.
But then also, I mean, because he does slap her in the waiting room, and, like, she's, like, praying that the gynecologist will say something to her or ask her, do you actually want a baby? Are you okay? And they don't. They direct all the questions to the man.
It's wild.
It is completely wild. It's so uncomfortable. I think there's just something, this character feels so incredibly real to me, having spent 250 pages in her head.
She's like a cool gal. She's like a cool young gal who's probably a very talented, interesting writer. And you're just, instead of being able to watch her, like, live her life and thrive and, like, have fun and bone these dudes that she wants to because she has, like, had relationships with other people and, like, you know, she is smart and blah, blah, blah. Like, you don't get to see her doing any of that, like, doing any of the cool gal stuff that you want to be observing of her life. Yeah.
I'm excited to see what else Mina Kandasamy writes.
Me too. I would read it.
I'll read every word. I loved also this kind of experimental section where she articulates everything that happens to her through...
The red dot.
The red dot.
Yeah. Which is like a... So what was... The red dot was like something from her computer screen. Is that what it
she
was?
She describes it as like at the bottom of her monitor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
But then it kind of... It morphs and changes colour depending on what's going on. I know. It's just kind of a really interesting little... aside, because I actually almost forgot about that section. It happens right in the middle of the book. I almost forgot about it, but just flicking through, I just caught it and I was like, oh yeah, that was kind of an interesting journey that we went on.
Yeah, for something that's like takes place very much in the real world, I like those little bits that go elsewhere, do something else. I think she's a really interesting writer, and it doesn't feel it feels very readable. I think it's only the subject matter that I think someone would probably struggle with. I don't think it's the writing. I just think, yeah, the only grounds on which someone might find this too, like, off-putting to read would be if they didn't want to read, like, 250 pages of quite intense, like, psychological and physical and sexual abuse.
Yeah.
But, no, I think in terms of the writing, it's, like, very readable, and kind of sometimes playful and interesting. Yeah,
I think it's quite bold, isn't it, to be playful when writing about something like this.
Yeah, it's weird. It didn't feel heavy. Like, it didn't... It was... I don't know how to explain it, but, yeah, I think it is just the subject matter rather than the way it's delivered. Like, it is... She communicates the reality of it really clearly, but it doesn't feel like a kind of heavy book. Maybe that's because the cover of my edition is a very juicy orange and yellow. But
I think it's because, I mean, the last line is optimistic. I am the woman who still believes brokenheartedly in love.
Mm.
You know, like, as much as it's about an abusive relationship, it's also about escape. Like, this character,
yeah,
she gets out.
And you know from the beginning that she got out. Yeah. So I think it's almost like you're reading it in the knowledge that, like, the terrible things you're reading about do end.
Yeah. And also I feel like she's not a gratuitous narrator. Even though the narrator goes into a lot of detail about the kind of psychological impact of what's happening to her, the actual violence, it's not written in, like, a kind of gleeful, yeah, my absolute darling level of, like, visceral,
yeah,
explicit,
yeah, and most of that description, the things that feel explicit tend to be the way that he talks to her and the things, exactly, that he says about her and, like, what her body will be like when he's done with her, and that's more towards the end, though, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I think this was a really good choice. I'm really excited to see what other people thought of it as well.
Yeah, me too. Because it was one of those books that I feel like I did know people who had read it, but I haven't seen, like, a huge amount of chat about.
I do wonder if it's because it's quite a difficult one to rave about on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, even the title needs to come with a content note.
Yeah.
I know that Elizabeth...
From Waterstones, Gower Street?
Yes. So I know Gower Street were a big fan of the book, and they've had... Mina has done a few events there. So that's where I've seen...
that I missed that, because I would have really liked to go, but it didn't work out timing-wise. And then on Twitter, she was like, this is going to be my last event for this book. Like, so if you want to see it... Yeah, so, like, that was game over. It all happened at exactly the wrong time. I got on board with this book way too late.
Always the way.
Yeah.
Actually, not always the way.
I'm either way ahead or way behind.
I'm never right on time.
No, exactly.
Much like in life.
Yes. So what would you recommend? If people like this book, what kind of books do you think are similar to it? Or not so much similar as, like...
Yeah, like, what would you recommend to someone who wants to read
things of this ilk
on the next... That's like, it's a really hard one. I know that I've talked about and read books about these kind of relationships before, but in right now my mind is completely blank because the writing style of this was so unique.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Like, I know that we've talked to Jenny Tighe about... Oh, First Love. That's an abusive relationship, isn't it?
I actually haven't read that.
Me neither. That was the bookseller in me being like, just link it to anything that sounds similar.
Yeah, I read like 4 of the Women's Prize shortlist last year, but not that one. So that's one that I don't know about. But maybe, yeah, maybe. But I feel like more people will probably have read that than will have read this at this point in the history of the world.
Also, I think first love isn't framed as an abusive relationship. And it's just, I think that's what's controversial about it.
Yeah. Is it one of those, like, framed as toxic relationship? Or, like,
no, I think the back of the book makes it sound like it's passion and romance. Mm. And, yeah, like, I think it has a certain vibe that is not quite in line with the content of the novel.
Interesting.
That's what I've been told, anyway.
Okay, well, I ain't read it, but, you know, maybe I will one day. Yeah, what else? I'm looking at my bookshelves. We're in my home today.
In like 5,000 degrees, although your flat's quite cool.
Yeah, this is temperature wise, we're doing good.
She's got a fucking candle lit though.
It's for the fragrance. I don't think candles provide that much warmth. Just delicious fake Jo Malone scent. I'm looking at my bookshelves and I'm just not seeing things that.
I suppose really normally when I come across these kinds of relationships in fiction, they're not from literary fiction, it's from thrillers.
Yeah, so
I guess
true.
That's why I'm like, there's a book on the tip of my tongue, but because I'm thinking of things like Apple Tree Yard,
yeah.
There's an abusive relationship in that. I'm thinking about Elizabeth Haynes' Into the Darkest Corner.
I haven't read that.
Like, the books about gaslighting, physical, emotional, mental abuse, sexual abuse, that's where I tend to kind of come across those kinds of relationships.
Yeah, so true.
And they don't have, you know, they get under your skin, but in such a different way. They make you feel frightened. This book, I think, has a much more sort of emotional.
Yeah, because they're doing it, like, they have chosen that plot to
be
enable, and to, like, enable a thrilling premise.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just a book about the reality of it.
And that's the thing, isn't it, is that in thrillers, the relationship will escalate.
Yeah.
Like, the scariest. It will always start off romantic, he loves me in my red dresses, and then slowly this insidious side of the character will come out. In this, it doesn't escalate dramatically. I mean, it does, but it doesn't have the kind that momentum,
yeah,
of things getting
already
progressively worse.
It feels like it's already gone in at a level at which you would read as an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Like, from the beginning, it's like, that behaviour is not acceptable. Yeah, you're right. It is a lot of, like, that is like a plot device in thrillers. Interesting. So this was on the Women's Prize shortlist. Have you read any of the other books on the shortlist?
I have. I've read The Idiot.
I have it. I can see it, but I haven't read it.
I'm excited for you to read it.
I'm excited to read it.
It's like, it could not be more different. What else was on the shortlist?
Home Fires.
That was the winner, wasn't it?
Yeah, by Camilla Shamsie. Sing Unburied Sing by Jessamyn Ward.
Haven't read that yet, but that's one that I feel people have raved about.
Yeah.
That's one that I'm excited to read.
Me too. I have it on my Kindle, I think. What else was it? Oh, The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock, which doesn't sound too much like my shit.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I probably won't read that
one. Yeah. Give that a miss.
Yeah. Not everything is for everyone.
No, it's true. There must be another one, wasn't there? Oh, Sight by Jesse Greengrass.
Oh, of course.
Someone who is known to you.
Yeah, we had Jesse on
the first ever short story salon.
The short story salon. So I will read Sight as well.
Eventually. I'd like to read that. I don't know anything about it. Do you?
Yes, it's a book about motherhood, and I think it's quite kind of, I would describe it as chewy.
Okay, cool.
You know, same with, you've read Jesse's short story collection, haven't you?
I have.
Yeah, I think like that kind of meaty prose. That's what I expect from it anyway.
I'll give it a go. Why not? You know the Women's Prize?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
This feels like a leading question.
Well, I don't feel like women are extremely underrepresented in the world of books. Maybe they're underrepresented in the world of literary prizes, though. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you have internet. Pull up the long list for the book of this year.
Let's pull up the long list for the book of this year. You're right. Because obviously, like, this, when I hit you, was shortlisted for both the Women's Prize for Fiction and the Jalak Prize. Mm-hmm. And obviously with the Jalak Prize, which is for non-white authors in the UK, I feel like that is, like, undisputably, it is important to have a prize that recognises achievement in that area. But yeah, I was just, you know, just thinking thoughts. I don't have any specific position on this. I just was like, what do you think?
Well, I think, ultimately, women are certainly, on the whole, I don't feel women are, like, underrepresented in literature. I think that women of colour are underrepresented in literature.
Yeah.
And I think that certain aspects of, like, of queer identities are underrepresented in literature. I don't think white women are underrepresented. And I suspect when we look at the Booker long list, we will see that it's pretty equals pequels between white men and white women.
Yeah, maybe.
But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to... I mean, again, like, we're only taking 1 year, but just I just want to see out of curiosity. Whereas the long list of the Women's Prize this year, given that we had just seen the Baileys pull out of the full sponsorship, there's always a bit of a question mark about the branding of the prize. I remember when Baileys took over from Orange. You know, Baileys is kind of... the associations with it are kind of like... it's not a gender-neutral thing. Like, I know it's obviously a beverage, so it is, but Baileys is seen as kind of like a slightly girlier drink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a lady drink for ladies.
Yeah, right? And, I like, that's... yeah. The whole branding of it was quite ladylike. You know, it was a fountain pen nib with a heart on it. Like, it was just quite kind of girlish.
Yeah.
Which I didn't really like, but then you get used to it, and then I stopped caring. When the prize kind of has rebranded again, and it's now just the Women's Prize with multiple sponsors, the long list had some more mass market titles on that it hadn't had previously. Like Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine, and like
the Joanna Cannon one.
The Joanna Cannon one, the name of which escapes me.
The Elsie one, the one with the Battenberg on the cover.
It was a gorgeous cover, like really kind of iconic Battenberg. And I know that like those books were very loved. So I'm not kind of saying that they didn't deserve to be recognised as great books, but they have a slightly different vibe to the more literary titles on the list. I do think, like, I'm kind of pro the prize having more of an identity than just work by women.
Yeah, I think it needs that, because, yeah,
my understanding of the purpose of the prize was because women were underrepresented in the more literary prizes,
yeah.
Like the Booker, and like the Nobel Prize for Literature obviously has a massive imbalance between men and women. There's only ever been 13 women to win that, out of which I think all are white. Did Toni Morrison get a Nobel?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
Either way, we're still looking at 13 women. Compared to men. And I don't think that women are underrepresented in mass market literature. If anything, that's women sell more in mass market and crime and thrillers than men.
Yeah, so I feel like the shortlist this year was really interesting,
mm-hmm.
and had a lot of like kind of built-in ethnic diversity, which I think is cool, because that is those are the women that I think should get shouted about more. I'm still trying to find like the... okay, winners and nominees, yeah. Yeah, TBH, this year. So Lincoln and the Bardo won, right? That was this year. Or was that...
what's that, sorry?
The okay. Booker Prize. The last one that's been announced was Lincoln and the Bardo, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Lincoln... this is the Booker Prize. Lincoln and the Bardo, Autumn by Ali Smith, Exit West by Mohsin Ahmed, 4321 by Paul Auster, Elmet... which is the lady, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't actually have an author listed on this Google
It's like
thing.
Fiona something. Anyway, yes, it's written by women.
And History of Wolves by Emily Friedland.
So it's equals pequels.
Equals and indeed pequels.
But three white women, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah.
And then two white men.
Yeah. And one who is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Maybe...
I mean, that's certainly, like, that's kind of my feeling towards it anyway. I think it's the same thing with, like, I don't know, something like Ms. Lexi is a writing magazine aimed at women, and I love it. I write for it, I subscribe as well, like, I think it's great. I think that carving out spaces just for women is good and valuable and important, but at the same time, I've always seen the Women's Prize as being a literary prize. then what does literary even mean? I know you could debate these things for decades.
Yeah, and then why is the long list much less literary than the short list, if we're going to think of it in those terms?
I guess it must depend. There are other factors as well, I suppose, like the different, every year you're going to have different judges that will be looking for slightly different things. I'm not sure how the judging of the Women's Prize works. I don't know how you get on that. How do you get on that panel? That's all I want to know.
Who do we need to talk to about getting on that panel?
I assume it's easy. Who do I need to buy a cold beverage for?
But yeah, that was just my thought. You know, I thought while we're chatting about the Women's Prize.
Do you think it's a valuable prize?
I think it's cool and interesting. It's definitely one that I'm interested in. I think it's, yeah. It's weird. So although I don't think women are underrepresented in fiction writing, and white women are probably not underrepresented in literary prize giving, I am interested in the Women's Prize shortlist because I think they are probably going to be books that I'll be interested in reading.
Yeah.
So even if not for like some grand political purpose, I am interested in it as a concept.
Yeah, agreed. And you're right, because in fact, we just read out the Booker shortlist from 2017. I've read one of those. It was Lincoln in the Bardo, and I hated it.
Yeah.
Like, the Booker is a prize it's never really resonated with me. I feel like it's would be quite low on my list of priorities of, like, prizes to try and read the entire shortlist of, or every winner or whatever.
Whereas last year when on my old podcast, I interviewed four of the shortlisted authors for the Women's Prize last year. So I read all of their books and they were all great. And I really got a lot out of reading them. And I was really happy to do that. And with the shortlist this year, although this is the only book, When I Hit You by Mila Kandasamy is the only book from that list that I've read, I am interested in reading all of the others. It feels maybe less predictable. I don't know. It feels...
I mean, it's a funny one, because I think we have already gone on record with the books that we were surprised didn't make the shortlist. Yeah. But, you know, Conversations with Friends, for example, that was one of our favourite books from last year. On the other, you know, I know this isn't the purpose of prizes. Prizes are to give recognition, but it didn't need the boost, you know? Whereas I'm quite excited to see books that maybe otherwise wouldn't find their readers.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm quite excited to see books like that, given a bit of a leg up.
Yeah, and I really hope that this book, When I Hit You, I Mean a Kandasamy, gets a bit of a leg up from this.
Oh, it definitely did.
Yeah.
It must have done.
I want more people to read it. I thought it was great.
Same.
I thought it was a spicy meatball.
Did you hear about that, the HarperCollins book club?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's such a bad look.
Yeah, that's the opposite of a spicy meatball.
That is such a bad look,
that's
honestly.
Like a wet hot dog from a can.
I don't know what they were thinking.
So explain it for our friends.
So Fern Britton is doing a book club with Tesco, right? Much like there's a Zoe Ball book club, there's a Rich and Judy book club. It's like a celebrity-endorsed book club. Except this book club, that it's basically it. They have a deal. Tesco have a deal with HarperCollins. All the books are going to be from one publisher. And people aren't impressed.
I'm not impressed. Like, I have no personal beef with HarperCollins. They're nice people. They do good books.
Yeah.
But that is not how a book club should work.
I feel like, I think as Nina Stibbs said on Twitter, that is called a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
You know?
Why is a media company endorsed, like, enabling that? Money, bitch.
I'm excited to see what books they choose.
Yeah.
Because I feel like
that at least tells us something. We can learn something from that.
Because I just also, like, one of the fun things about curating a book club, right, as we know, as book club hosts, is picking, like, an exciting, diverse range of books, like, going with different genres, different authors, and different publishers. I feel like each, you know, as a publisher, generally, you have... you have a manifesto, don't you? You have, like, a
purpose and
a brand.
Life, yeah.
And even if you have lots of, like, little... What are they called?
Imprints.
Little imprints, yeah, that have very distinctive brands. If they're all still coming from the same...
Yeah, they're still parts
you know,
of the
tree.
Same machine. Yeah, branch of the same tree, if you will. Whereas, obviously, like, we well know that I am very much biased in favour of this, But I thought it was cool that the Zoe Ball Book Club has Dark Pines by Waldine, which is published by One World, an imprint of One World at that. Like, that is not a big publisher. And I feel like that is really cool. Like, I think that is specifically a cool thing that I will go on record as saying is cool. Because a kind of media company funded book club could easily just go for books from any of the big five, and no one would notice. No one would notice.
Yeah.
We only noticed this HarperCollins one because they are literally all HarperCollins. Whereas if it was like one from Penguin, one from Miller, one from Runner, you know, like no one would notice because that is what we expect. Whereas I do think it's genuinely very cool that this little book from this little publisher, this little imprint of this little publisher, is like getting some serious attention.
Especially when, like, when small publishers are struggling, like we've seen Salt have had to do a drive on Twitter to try and get people to buy their books directly.
Influx are doing a
Patreon thing, which is really cool as well. Like, that's for me ideal. I'm so happy to just give like a couple of quid a month
to ensure the continued success of a great publisher. Shit.
But, you know, like, just, I think having that much power and influence, being able to, like, literally make a bestseller and just striking a financial deal with one publisher is really disappointing.
I agree. I'm glad we agree. I mean, there's no
way we agree. Yeah. End of podcast. Yeah. Bye.
Obviously, there's no way we would have disagreed on that. I just, you know. But I'm glad we got it out there. I'm glad we've, like, had this conversation, stated our position on this.
I also was just chatting then. I kind of forgot that we were recording. I just wanted to talk about it.
That's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
I always think, like, when we're sitting in the garden at the Nag's Head and we're talking about books, I'm like, this is content. We're wasting it.
Yeah, save it for the pod.
Save it for the pod.
For fuck's sake.
Save it for the pod is our motto. Well, right. I guess, you know, we've kind of covered a lot. So, we've got a little cute little episode coming up in 2 weeks where we take you through books that we have been enjoying in the first half of this year and the books that we're looking forward to in the second half of the year.
And then that will be, we will then have the August Book Club, the first Monday of August. But then we're going to have a little break for the summer holidays so we can
read some stuff.
Read widely and deeply. And then we'll come popping back in September.
Better than ever. cool. Well, I've had a great time.
Me too.
See you on the flip side, my friends.
I've had the time of my life.
And I owe it all to you.
Ah,
bye.
Bye.